Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome to another version of Bill Roden on Sports. I'm here at a cool location here in Harlem, Northern Upper Harlem. Here, of course, with great friend and co-host. Got a bunch of co-hosts today. You got a full house of co-hosts.
Yeah.
Great Jamal Murphy. Murph, what's going on?
So, Bill, just admiring the new bike behind you. Looks like an antique or something.
Yeah, well, you know, that's why I can't tell people I am, because they'll steal this shit, you know.
That is true. That is true.
Because you can't, you know, with that kind of bike, guys, but don't get off the bike, man. You just have to keep pedaling.
That's right.
My mother got her bike stolen a couple weeks ago.
Oh, no.
Right from
the, amazing.
From the garage of her building.
Oh, man.
Oh, man. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
wow.
Man.
They clipped the lock and everything.
Unreal. Well, we'll go back to that, because, you know, whole thing, man, about this whole thing of Black Lives Matter, Law and Order, you know, don't defund the police. I mean, well, I say you could, because, you know, some of these cats out here, you know. And then, of course, we got the wonderful Aaron Mathewson. Hey, Aaron, what's going on?
Hello. I was actually just thinking about your bike and all the Rebel bikes. Have you seen those? Scooters?
The Rebels?
Nice. Yeah. I guess there's like the scooters now that just like that you can't buy them anymore because too many people died.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Didn't they just, because somebody else just got killed, right? The CBS, CBS reporter.
Oh, wow.
I saw an accident yesterday and I was like, no, thank you. Is this guy
on a scooter?
Yeah, he was like, the car in front of him stopped too quick. And so he like swerved and like flew off. It was, I'm not riding one.
I got to tell you. Well, anyway, we'll talk bikes in a minute. Then, of course, and another undisclosed location in southern Manhattan, the great Steve Wilson. Steve, what's going on?
Hey, everybody. Just hanging in here.
Hello.
Hanging in here. Good to see everyone.
Yeah, so everybody's in their bubble. So, man, there's so much to unpack. You know, I mean, there's lots of stuff to unpack. Jamal, our erstwhile producer, send us a lot of stuff, man. Baseball, coronavirus. Just so much stuff. How each of you? I mean, how's everybody been hanging out or holding out during Corona? I mean, we've been talking about this since March. How's everybody been doing? How's everybody been hanging in?
As well as can be. As I tell my friends, the family who I'm in touch with. Of course, folks who are not in state, and they say, wow, man, you guys in phase four. I'm like, yeah, but I'm still in phase one.
Right.
And I'm going to be in phase one until we get a vaccine. So that's how I'm rolling.
I hear that.
So what does that mean? What does phase one mean for you?
Well, you know, just doing all the precautions. I'm not going out to, I'm glad to see restaurants opening and operating again, but I have no desire to be around large groups of people. But I'll try to order takeout or something here and there. I go out as necessary, basically, but I'm not like, it's summertime, let me frolic around and things are normal. Like, no,
right.
No.
Right.
So wear my gloves, my mask, you know. A lot of people aren't wearing gloves now, but I'm still wearing gloves whenever I go out. So when I empty garbage my building. So, so I'm still taking every precaution until there's a vaccine.
Yeah, I'm masking up, but I'm not wearing the gloves so much, but that's probably good to go back wearing gloves. What about you, Aaron? How you been hanging in there?
I've been good. The only thing, my apartment, we only have AC in a few of the rooms. So I'm playing musical chairs and it gets hot sometimes. But I mean, COVID-wise, fortunately, everybody's good. I actually took the test.
You did?
I am negative, but I did not like the test at all. It hurt.
With the swab in the nose.
I had to get in both nostrils.
Oh, wow.
Were you, were you in Orlando or something?
New Mexico.
They knew. No, like the,
you're right.
Near, it was Harlem. Like New York City has these like free testing sites now, which is really good.
Yeah.
Good job, New York City.
How do you do that? How do you do that? Because I every time I come in and out my undisclosed location in Manhattan, I've got to have my temperature taken.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because, you know, if you go in there, you know, like 100, whatever, they say, sorry.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but how do you do the test? You just walk in and say, test me?
Yeah, you like, they line you up outside. Like, it's kind of like a tent. Like, you don't go inside. It's like a makeshift area. And they line you up, that you fill out a questionnaire, and then they email you and call you about your results. So I think it took me about like maybe 30 minutes to 45 minutes, like standing in line and getting it done. You get your antibody test.
How long did it take you to get the test?
I waited 45 minutes in line.
I mean, the result.
Like 2 to 3 days. It was quick.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I mean, I've heard some people, I have a friend of mine, she said, you know, she was trying to go to Karakou. Because her mother is a citizen, and they had last minute plane they could make last minute plane arrangements, but they needed to test negative before they could get on the plane. So they went to the city MD close to them and got the test, but they didn't get the results back in time. It took over a week. It depends.
Oh, wow.
So it's always better, I think, to go to the city, you know, mandated ones. Because I took the antibody test about a couple months ago.
Okay.
And I got results back in, you know, 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. So I think, and those were state mandated places. There was one in each borough for that. And that was 2 months ago. So.
Yeah. Same with me. Went on the COVID test. I went to, what was it? A Northwell clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And not too far from me. And, got my results back in, thinking, 36 hours. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, I'd like to get a test. I haven't gotten to taking the test yet. I'd like to
come to Harlem, Bill.
Well, you're in Harlem, right?
I'm in Harlem.
Yeah, just look for long lines.
Exactly.
The line.
Exactly.
You know, that, like, to Steve's point, though, I'm like, shit, I don't want to be around people. You know, I mean, you may get the virus while you're waiting to get tested for the virus.
Yeah. You know, actually, what I did, it was the first day after Cuomo announced that they were widely available. And you can go on the state website.
Right.
And it'll tell you which places in your neighborhood are offering the test. And you can make an appointment. And like Aaron said, you can, you know, do the questionnaire. You can do the questionnaire online.
Oh, cool. Right.
And they'll do a televisit with you before you go. And then that way, when you get there, you have a designated time. And you usually see them within, you know, 5 or 10 minutes of that time, and it's done.
Yeah, that's what.
Where is that?
Yeah, there's a state. I forget. It's something.gov. But there's a state website, and you can just go to that website and just follow the prompts, and it'll, you know, tell you which places in your neighborhood are administering the test.
Oh, cool.
Speaking of the phases, this has been interesting to me. I know, Steve, you said, you know, you're staying in phase one. And I'm, you know, I've been cautious, but I've caught myself doing a little more, you know, so I have been to, you know, eating outside at a restaurant like twice, I think. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just very.
That means 12 times.
Uh-uh. Well, I think I've sat down and had a drink more than twice, but actual food a couple times. But it is funny. It's just like a whole new social construct. Like,
it is.
Mm-hmm. You know, like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm kind of like on the cautious side. Like most people sit down and they take off their mask, and I like keep mine on until I'm actually drinking and eating. And then, mm-hmm. you know, people will talk to you, and then they don't have a mask on. And I'm like, and then I have my mask on, and I'm like, wait, you know, am I being mean to this person because I'm keeping my mask on? It's like a whole different.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh!
It's a whole different social construct that we never thought we'd have to think about.
Okay, right. On that note, it is so hard because my natural inclination because I've gone to bars and tried to, you know, do my best social distance.
Outside, you mean?
Outside, yeah.
Okay.
And for the most part, it's good. But then you meet people, like you might talk to them, and then my inclination is I want to hug people. Oh, like, can't. Yeah. But it's been, I don't know about you guys, I love to ear hustle, and it's really cute hearing groups of friends who obviously haven't seen each other in a long time. Like, you can tell they're like, this is the first time in a while. It's really nice.
Mm-hmm. What do they call it? Ear hustle?
Yeah.
That's a new one. That's a new one for me, too.
Okay.
What is that?
We're just like listening to other people's conversations.
I see. Yeah. What's happening in music, Steve? Has the scene improved at all?
Well, venues are now starting to stream concerts. A few of the clubs are streaming weekly concerts now. So there is some movement. And that's positive. Of course, you know, still no touring or anything. And we're hopeful for next year, but yeah, I've done a couple of them. Got a couple more dates for September. No large groups, just duos. And I think, like Smoke, I think they're doing quartets. I think, the Vanguards, they have been doing it for about a month. Smoke has been doing it. So, There is some action going, and people are doing whatever they can, you know, just to try to keep things happening.
So what do you mean? So the musicians go like into Smoke, into Vanguard, and play?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They no audience, no live audience. As a matter of fact, there was an article last week in the New York Times. Bill Charlap did a solo concert out at the Deerhead Inn out in Pennsylvania. Just to illustrate, you know, some of what was going on in the scene. And so, yeah, we're seeing bits of that, I think, all across the country and in Europe now. So, so yeah, folks are just trying to keep it going, trying to move forward.
And you've done a couple, you said?
I did one with Helen Sung. We did a little duo mini concert at her apartment in Queens a couple of weeks ago. And it was a benefit for the DC Jazz Fest, of course, which was postponed, but we did a benefit for DC musicians, and it was great because a lot of people tuned in, and we got a lot of nice feedback. So,
how can we see that? How can people see that? Well, forget me. How can I see it?
Well, you mean that particular concert, or just in general?
Yeah, I love Helen Sung.
You know what? I think if you go to her website, I think there's a link still there. I think you had to do a subscription at the time, but I think you can. They archive it. I think you can still see it. So if you go to DC Jazz Fest or her website, I think there's a link there.
And how did that work in terms of, you know, you had a mat, like had masks, gloves. Did you feel comfortable performing?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. Well, I had already tested negative, and Helen had also. So, and that was the first time and only time, actually, I had been out of my neighborhood at that point. Wow. So it was on a Sunday, and it was still, I think we were still in phase two or three. But there was, I took a car service. There were hardly any cars on the road a Sunday afternoon, a Sunday evening. And and Helen and I have known each other for many, many years. So we both totally felt comfortable about it, and we discussed it beforehand. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but it was totally cool.
Well, you know, that kind of segues into, you know, the NBA season starts tomorrow. I think this podcast will probably go up tomorrow, Thursday, and the NBA season begins tomorrow, you know, without fans. I was curious, how did you feel? I mean, you've got a reference because you're a performing artist and you're performing without fans. How does that feel, and how do you think the players are going to, how do you think that's going to affect competition or the spirit, or did it affect your playing?
Well, I mean, my playing was definitely affected. Number one, that was my first performance with another musician since, I think, March 14 or something like that. So you know, even when you practice, it's not the same as performing. And of course, with Helen, you know, because we have a natural chemistry because we've played together many, many years together, but also not playing in front of an audience it changes things. It's a different dynamic because you don't have the energy, they had the feedback, you know? And though it felt good to play and to play with each other, but so I can imagine that the athletes are going through a similar experience, though they know each other from playing, you know, together and practicing, but they're not getting that energy from the crowd, you know. Right. And not to say that they're not going to be professional, of course they will be. But I think you'd be hard pressed to find any of those players who would say, well, we're really playing at the top of our game, you know, under these circumstances. They haven't played in months, haven't played competitively in months. They don't have their home crowd or the opposing crowd, whatever, you know. And of course, many of them have said, you know, how much energy they get from the crowd. So I'm sure it's affected their level of play.
Yeah, it's interesting. Shaq, I heard Shaq on TNT, the TNT broadcast the other day, and he was saying he felt like he would really be affected because he fed off the crowd. But what he didn't think about was, you know, the non-superstar guys who oftentimes struggle on the road.
Right.
And how, you know, they might actually up their game because there's less pressure. And him and Dwayne Wade were saying there's going to be a lot of guys who earn some fake contracts off of this off of this bubble situation.
Yeah. So I went to Citi Field on Sunday. That was sort of that was the first time I've been to a live event since March 11th. On March 11th, that was the first day of March Madness, and I was at the Big 12 tournament in Kansas City. And that was the day that all hell broke loose. That's the day that the two NBA players tested positive. I went to Citi Field, but you know, I am glad there are no fans, and for a couple reasons. First of all, the Mets got killed, and cats made a couple errors and all that, but there was no booing. You know, the pitcher got rocked. There was no booing. You know, there was no, you know, you just, you know, there's none of that. And then I was thinking for the NBA, the WNBA players who I love, who walked off the court before the national anthem, you know, and the two New York Yankees, Stanton and Hicks, who continued to kneel, you know, when the ceremonial bullshit, you know, the league ceremonial stuff, kneel before and then stand up. They kept kneeling. But it was great because normally had there been fans, there'd been boo or hit. Here, there's nothing. The fans' nonsense has totally been taken out of it. And I'm kind of glad there are no fans.
They are importing fake noise into games in the broadcast, like the cheering and the stuff. I think that's fascinating. And then putting up the cardboard fans in Major League Baseball stadiums. Yeah, I still think it's probably going to not be as fun to play, I imagine. But
for some reason, I like the cardboard cutouts.
It's so cute.
You know, just I don't know why. I mean, and you can do a lot with it. You can put make it funny. You can put celebrities. So I like, and it does make it seem like, you know, just, you know, there's something going on. But I hate the fake noise for some reason. So I like the cutouts, but I hate the noise.
but you could pay for a fee. You could have your picture posted, like behind home plate or somewhere.
Oh, yeah, we like should do that.
Dollars or something like that.
That's not bad.
You know, so I was telling,
put Bros Pod in the back, you know, Pod. Behind the plate.
We should invest like $1,000-something and put Bros Pod all over the stadium.
You talked about, you know, about the anthem and the playing of the anthems. And maybe this is on the agenda to discuss anyway, but you mentioned the word pageantry. And I thought that was so right on because, you know, the NFL seems to be just falling all over itself to placate the athletes, you know, with, you know, we're going to play Lift Your Voice and Sing. We're going to put Black Lives Matter in the end zone. And we're going to do everything except hire some brothers in the front office.
Right. Exactly.
Right. And that's like every corporation is doing that. It's not just sports.
Yeah, right. Right. So it's just funny to me, man, how, you know, all of this window dressing. I mean, I think I won't put the crowd noise and the, you know, the plackets and the stands as in that category. But just in terms of, you know, what you mentioned with the kneeling and stuff, I thought, man, okay, are we really getting to the substance of the matter? And of course, now that we see the situation with the Marlins and the Phillies and the Yankees, this is tricky territory now.
Oh man, do you guys think that? I mean, it seemed like in retrospect, the NBA, to the extent, you know, it seemed like the bubble seems to be the way to go. All this stuff is driven by money.
Right.
The only reason people they're doing any of this stuff is money. They're trying to recoup lost money, and the players got to get paid, so they're kind of over a barrel. And then, you know, they're basically coercing the poor college players because you know what's going on down there. That's almost like the real plantation system. They're kind of coercing these brothers to come in, probably threatening scholarships, and they're kind of forcing these brothers to, like, come as opposed to saying, listen, the students, I mean, everybody's getting sick. So we just, you know, I think what everybody should do is say, listen, we're going to just chalk this year up. This is a lost year. Like, Steve, I think you hit on the head. We're a year away. We're at least a year away. So we're just going to shut it all down.
Too much money.
Too
much money. They won't allow themselves to do that. And we know, I mean, we know money rules this country. I mean, this country's all about money. So they're willing to sacrifice people. I mean, look at baseball right now. 18 people on the Miami Marlins have it. 16 players, two coaches. And there's not even a thought of shutting it down. We'll just take a week off, you know. We'll let the Yankees play somebody else, you know. They'll be fine.
We'll go play somebody else.
First of all, I thought quarantine was 14 days. They could just take, they're taking like 6 days off. Oh, and where are they getting the players from? You got 16. Well, that's more than half the roster.
The minors. The minors. They're bringing up the minors. Next batter up, next man up. And the minor league guys said, well, we'll give it a shot. don't care. I mean,
The major league guys said they'll give it a shot because they actually, once, you know, they knew people had tested positive, they had a, you know, the Marlins voted, or they, you know, they took some sort of poll and they said, we want to keep playing. So you can't even leave it to them to make the right decision.
No.
There needs to be a grown-up in the room.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, guys, I'm going to have to hop off. But I don't, from what I'm seeing, I don't see how you play without a bubble. Like, I just think it's irresponsible to your families. And this is going to, like, and if you, unless you just have endless amounts of people who are just going to come in and, like, you know, when people get sick, because they will, I don't know how you do it.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And if 18 people on one team doesn't stop it, what is it going to take? You need what, you know, if one other team it happens to, you know, they can just say, oh, well, you know, we survived the Marlins. Like, how, like, when is enough? Like, what is the line?
I probably would say, if they die, players die.
Right.
Then they say, well, wow, it's too bad. Okay. Well, okay. The Phillies are eliminated. They eliminated from competition. All right. Next. So now we have to, like, you know, I mean, these people, unbelievable. Well, Aaron, it's great seeing you.
Great seeing you. This is a bright spot of COVID for me, Bill, still seeing you guys. I'm glad we do this.
Yep. Watch those, ear hustles.
Ear hustle? Yes.
Right.
Yeah, but be careful, man. Are you still running?
Yep, of course. It's just hot.
Okay.
And I have special, like, hydration. Like, I have a hydration drink because otherwise I feel like mess where at.
I must tell you this. I splurged about 3 weeks ago. For years, I've been watching. There's this box CD set. It's 100 years of Olympics. 100 years of Olympics. Mm. It's all starting back to 1920. They've got all this video from 1920 all the way to, like, the last Olympics. But it's been so fascinating to watch this stuff. And had such a great treat the other night. I went to Morgan State, and one of the great Olympians was a guy named George Roden, who attended Morgan, and he was part of this great Jamaican track tradition. And But I'd heard about him. I never met him. All the professors asked me, did I know him? I lied. I said, yeah, he's my uncle, you know. But he was a legend. But in all these years, I never saw him run. I never saw him run. And I looked at the 1952 Helsinki Olympics, And it was so cool to see George Roden, Herb McKinley, all these cats I knew as older people, you know, like when they're in their, you know, 70s, all that. But I never, it's something to go back and see these people when they're 22 and all that. And they showed just one thing of the competition was just remarkable. They showed the 4x100 relay, and it was, and you could tell these, all, because 1952, so all the black people, they all knew each other. You know, you could mm-hmm. tell, and there was like little shit talking, you know, you could just tell these cats. And the final leg, it was George Roden, Jamaica versus Herb McKinley down the stretch. This other cat had already, when he took the baton on the third leg, he was 15 meters behind. He was 15 meters behind. He tracked down this white cat, you know. He ran him down, and when he gave the baton to Roden, he had a step lead, and it was Herb McKinley and Roden. Mm. And it was just amazing. At one point in that race, and you can see, at one point in that race, you know, when you're running, you know, I don't know if you get this, when rigor mortis starts setting in, because it is just so hard. And you can tell he closed his eyes. He just closed his eyes and just threw his head back. It was all about will. That's wow. all it was about that. The last fight was all about will. And mm. he finally won. And he maintained it one step. But it's funny. But the hero was Herb McKinley from Jamaica, who's the one who closed that 10-yard thing. Mm. And you could tell on the victory stand, you had these brothers from the U.S. and these brothers from Jamaica. And it was so funny. They were like, you could tell the one was just talking shit on the stand, wow. you know. And this guy, particularly Herb, had the gold medal because he had finished second to Herb McKinley beginning at the 1948 games. And he finally, and you could tell he was looking at the gold medal. And there was like her, you know, it was like Mal Whitfield was there. You could tell they was like talking shit. But, you know, it was so funny that although it was 1952, you could just imagine them, particularly what was getting ready to go on in the United States then. I mean, it was awful in the United States in 1952. Mm-hmm. So you knew there was like a bond there. Mm. So although they were competitive, you knew they were probably having a ball in Helsinki, competing each other. Right. And they were the heroes of the Olympic. And then the sisters, the 4x1 American relay team, 4x1 upset Australia, who's like the favorite. And these sisters smoked them. They set a world record. Not only did the brothers set two world records, they set the Olympic world record, the U.S. world record, and the Jamaican world record. The sisters set an Olympic record and a U.S. record in the 4x1. You could just see, and it was an upset, and you could just see the joy when they, you could just see these sisters were celebrating, and they were just so happy and hugging. And there's one sister, 15-year-old Barbara Jones, who was the youngest Olympian ever to win. Okay, she was 15 years, and they were all Tiger Bells. They're all Tennessee State Tiger Bells. Mm. And you could just see the joy in their face and the pride. It was just such an emotional thing to even see it in 2020. You were connected. You could just see. And you knew how they must have felt by doing that. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
What's that box set?
It's the 100 years of the Olympics. 100 years of Olympic something. But it's just phenomenal. In fact, you could see, like they had Jim Thorpe. And they had a young Jim Thorpe accepting his medal. And we've seen these people. Then first brother to ever win an Olympic medal was DeHart Hubbard. 1924, he became the first African-American to win an Olympic medal. He won it in the long jump. And mm-hmm. he was a big star at University of Michigan. I knew about it, but I never, like, it's not to see them, to right. see him actually compete and win the event. And then to see somebody, then Google them and find out what happened after that. Right. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it was really, it's just so much, I'm having so much fun. Like, but it was great. There's one brother who was a long jumper. They showed the long, he was a 1951 and night going to 1952 long jump champion. His brother. He was a champion. He could not be beaten. And his competition, he filed four straight times and eliminated.
Oh, wow.
And at the very last time he filed, he just laid in the pit. You could just say he just laid in the pit. Wow. And just, but I didn't know that till I Googled it. I said, why? I said, oh, this cat was going in. He went in as the favorite. You know, he had like maybe lost once, or something, you know. And he had, like, of all venues, the Olympics is one shot. And then after that, he was fine. But there at the biggest spot, you committed four fouls. So I'm looking forward, man, to going back to the Jesse Owens Olympics, going back to the 1932 when you had your real big contingent of Black folks, you know. So it's really, man, it's really just been great, great history.
No, good stuff. I got to check that out.
And make you a runner yet, Phil.
No, but you know what? I got on my bike. Right. I was so pumped up. You know, I got on my bike. It was like, ride. Don't stop now. But, you know, it just shows the competition just cuts through ages and generations, you know. It just cuts through. I mean, so anyway, I could go on, but it's just...
Maybe these sports are important.
I'm saying...
Well,
so great to see you guys.
All right.
Bye, Aaron.
I love the 1619 shirt, Jamal. Yeah, very nice.
Saw that 1619.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Very nice.
I ordered it.
Somewhere. Here's a question: who's making it? Who's making the T-shirt? Who's making the profit?
Good question.
Why, look at the label. Look at the label. Made in Thailand.
Probably. I'll look as soon as we get out of here. I'll look.
Yeah, tell us. But, you know, what can you say? I guess you can't have everything.
Yeah, probably. Everything's made in Asia these days. Yeah. Everything. Yeah.
So, no, I mean, talking about, you know, going with the Olympics and how it made you feel and seeing all that stuff in the competition. You know, I mean, I can't, you know, when I'm watching basketball now, I can't even baseball a little bit. Like, I am kind of into it. You know, I know. You're right. I agree. They probably none of these people should be playing. At least the NBA, you know, created this bubble atmosphere, which to me, even if the NBA succeeds, it's still kind of a bad look for the country because what about the rest of us? Where's my bubble? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they can take care of these guys. None of these guys are coming up positive for COVID anymore. So it's working, at least for the first couple of weeks, it's working. But then, you know, but there are people out here who need the same kind of attention. And so it's really just highlights what's going on in the rest of the world. So, you know, it's a weird dynamic where, you know, I'm entertained. I'm going to watch the NBA. I'm going to watch baseball. But, you know, there's that other side where, you know, it's kind of immoral, you know.
Right, well, that's it.
Right.
Yeah. Are you going to watch, Steve?
You know, I'm going to try to get there. And for the reasons that Jamal just mentioned, because I think it's as much of a moral issue that the professional athletes, let's say that the organizations, because they have, you know, access to the constant testing that they're going to need to do if they're going to play these games. And they have to get tested, you know, every week, if not a few times every week.
Right.
And many people in the United States still cannot get tested. And if they can, in some instances, they're waiting 2 to 3 weeks for a result. So it speaks to this dichotomy, which is a part of this broader discussion that we're having in this country right now, which, of course, COVID is highlighting all of these issues. It's bringing all of these issues to the fore. So it is, for me personally, as much as I love sports, it's a moral issue. It really is. And Bill, you mentioned this in your forum, you know, it's like, well, what's really important right now? And look, there's a side of me that's glad to see sports being played, you know, because it's so ingrained in our culture. And we know that the contributions and opportunities that sports has presented to many of our folks, particularly. So not to downplay its importance from that level, but with the broader discussion and the big issues that we have in this country right now, and not just in this country, but globally, is this really something that we can, you know, afford to deal with right now? So it's going to take a while for me to wrap my head around it. And the big thing for me is football. I mean, because football is number one you know, the number one sport for me as a spectator. And I don't know, man. I don't see it happening, at least not in the college ranks. I don't see it happening. I just don't see it happening.
How? How are they going to do it? I mean, that's the ultimate contact, non-social distancing sport. It's almost like you might just say fuck it. Y'all just gonna get sick.
Right. Well, that's what they're saying. You know, I mean, that's what baseball is saying, and that's what football. I mean, football. Even, you know, football. It's not even about on the field to me. I mean, you know, you're right. Contact. They're all on top of each other. At least they're outside. But what about the locker room? And what about, you know, just like baseball? They're allowing these guys to, after a game, after practice, you go home and do whatever you want.
Well, that's bizarre. That's bizarre. You play, then you go who knows where.
Right.
You know, who knows where. And then a lot of those guys, man, are like, you know, support POTUS 45. It's like no mask, you know, no social distancing. You know, this is a hoax. And then half the damn league is like sick. And I guess they figure that shit's a hoax too.
Right. No, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. And I think, you know, you're going to have these, you know, in terms of when, what's enough for the league? Like we talked about just earlier, you know, what's the line when they shut it down? And it's to the point where, you know, you have all these Trump people and all, you know, all, like you said, who think it's a hoax, and they'll talk away the cases. Now it's not, now the cases, the number of cases don't matter because, you know, not as many people are dying. So they can say, oh, that doesn't matter now if they get it. You know, these guys are young. So to me, it's almost like you're going to need something ridiculously tragic to happen. You're going to need somebody to die, a player to die, for them to even, you know, consider stopping it.
Yeah. And
then they'll just consider, yeah.
Yeah. Well, when you consider that they have to travel, even if they're talking about playing just conference games, which Notre Dame just announced today, I think they're just going to play conference games, whatever that means. And they still, you're going to have to travel. So you're going to go somewhere. You're going to go to a hotspot state. You're going to put a team of, 60-something, 80-something players on an airplane. And they're going to travel back to. So none of it makes sense. None of it makes sense right now. It just doesn't. You know, I mean, even today, who's the congressman from Texas? I call him Gohmert Powell.
Louie Gohmert,
who's been one of these deniers. And now he's tested positive. And he still doesn't believe it.
Right.
He's still saying, well, I got it from wearing my mask. What?
Oh, my God.
I mean, this is the level of insanity we're dealing with in this country right now.
Yeah, those people are zealots, man. They will walk into the ocean, you know, like how the state walked into the Dismal Swamp, and they just drown themselves and call themselves, they're just sacrifices. I mean, it's just, you know, that they will go down with the ship. But I don't know, man. I think you guys mentioned before, they're just an immorality. But yet, we still watch. See, that's the problem. Everybody's going to be glued to TV. You know, nobody's going to, like, not watch because of whatever. I don't know. You know, people are going to be glued. There's going to be an audience.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you think about all of the, I guess, the reruns have already recycled. So folks are like, okay, we've exhausted that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, see, the real deal. I mean, I can listen to old concerts. I mean, in other words, I'll go on YouTube and I love to see those old jazz at the Philharmonic concerts and things like that. Cause I just love to see what Lester Young looked like or what Bird looked like and what Ella Fitzgerald looked like. And just like when I saw the competition of the Olympics, you could still feel the energy. I mean, like a live performance, you could still, it's almost like you were there, you know? But in terms of sports, I can't really, to me, sports is the ultimate. I want it, it's unscripted. I don't want to see it all because I know that. Unless it might be Ollie, Thriller, Manila, there may be one or three things, but otherwise, I don't want to see that. I want to see what's happening live, fresh, what's happening today. You know, that's what I want to see.
Yeah.
So Another thing I wanted to ask you guys, I mean, I said that I'm really happy that fans are taken out the equation, because to me, fans have just gotten to the point of being really entitled, obnoxious, you know, the booing, the throwing stuff, the feeling that when they could pay $50 to get into a ticket to an arena, that entitles them to be transformed into morons.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, forget it. But I was also thinking of not having sports back. Like you guys were saying, we were so focused. We were so focused as a nation. We were focused on all these big issues. Even though it wasn't pleasant, it was focused. And there was nowhere to go. We couldn't tune into sports radio because they had to talk about social issues. Now, mm-hmm. I can see it's getting back to the same silly shit, you know. Mm-hmm. Who's going to win? Who's going to lose? Let's see. Can we see a great play? I'm sorry, man. After all the stuff we've been through, go back to that stuff? I don't know.
You know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I hear you. Well, I mean, the NBA bubble, one of the things, you know, that the players said, you know, the argument they made in terms of, you know, why they wanted to come back was that they, you know, would give us the platform to continue to speak about it. You've seen that a little bit. Reporters are asking questions about, you know, social justice matters. There's been a lot of, you know, Breonna Taylor, you know, lock up the cops who killed her, that kind of stuff, on the court, which I kind of like. I can't lie. When I see that Black Lives Matter on the court, that does touch me. You know, probably more than I thought it would. Like, I really like that they're playing on a court that says Black Lives Matter on it. You know, they're gonna, you know, the NBA players said they're gonna kneel during the anthem. We'll see tomorrow or, you know, Thursday.
We'll see.
So there's, you know, I think the NBA across the board, I think, has been, and you know, they're not perfect. The NBA is not perfect. You know, they have their own issues. They got to deal with, like you said, they got to hire people in the, you know, in the upper echelons of organizations. They need to hire more Black people or any Black people. But they, you know, compared to the other leagues, they've been the most responsible across the board, whether it's COVID-19 or whether it's, you know, the social issues. And I know it's a low bar comparing them to the, you know, Major League Baseball or football, but it is what it is. I mean, you know, when one player got COVID-19, they shut it down and everybody else followed the first time. And mm-hmm. we already see, you know, these other leagues. You know, Major League Baseball, you can get 18 players, get it, and they keep it going. Football, I'm just very scared. You know what I mean? And when we talk about rooting, you know, I feel more comfortable watching the NBA and rooting for the NBA because they are just the more responsible league. Come football time, I'm not even sure I'll be able to watch, you know, when you know what that they're just not going to care at all. And they're not going to have it. They're not going to try to put together any bubble. You know, I'm rooting for guys to sit out. You already got about 25 guys or so who have said that they are going to sit out of the NFL season this year, including Devin Funchess, Marquise Goodwin, Patrick Chung, Dont'a Hightower. So I'll be interested to see how many more NFL guys do this, because that's just going to be a cesspool to me.
Let's see if Patrick Mahomes sits out. Well, if he says he's out, now you talk about something.
There haven't been any stars to do it. But NBA also, there weren't any stars that sat out.
Right.
I mean, but the guys you just mentioned, Jamal, are marquee players. And so they're more surely to follow. And I'm sure they're assessing the situation with everything as we move closer to the season. Because you still have, and today, Florida and California again set new records for cases. I mean, this is beyond anything that we've ever experienced. And, you know, even when we think, well, we're just about to get over it, no. And this is not even the second wave yet. That's the other thing.
That's the frightening shit, man.
That's the other thing.
You know, that is. That's like the frightening shit. And you know, I think you're right. You think because it's summertime, And it's like a false, it's like a mirage, because it's summer and it's nice. You're like, ah, you know, you kind of hanging out and all that. And that ain't it, man. I mean, you know, I'm kind of with you, Steve. I may go out a little more, but I mean, I stay in my car, you know?
Yeah.
That's what my car is, my quarantine. I go from one spot to the other. Both places I go to are deserted. It's like only me, you know, just me, you know, no restaurants for me, you know, a mask up. And now that you mentioned it, I'll probably go back to wearing gloves. I think I'm going to get those big hockey gloves, you know, the big goaltender gloves.
It's too hot right now. Yeah, wait for the winter.
I'm walking around with like goaltending gloves, you know.
right.
The big hockey helmet and shit.
right. Hazmat suit.
Yeah.
And yeah. It all depends on the, you know, there's no federal leadership. So, you know, which, and I've said all along, like, you know, I didn't think these sports really had a chance, because we're in a country that doesn't have a chance, because we don't have any real leadership at the top. So it's all local leadership. And we're actually in New York, which is surprising. Like, you know, we're actually in a, compared to everybody else, we're in a decent situation. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, we're only getting, you know, a few hundred cases a day, compared to, like, you know, like you said, Florida, California getting thousands. Did you see Cuomo? He offered Major League Baseball. He said, why doesn't every team come here and play? You know, we're, right, all of a sudden, New York is the safest place. Can you even imagine?
I don't want them here. Shit, they're gonna bring the Florida Marlins.
That's right.
No, Mario. We're doing just fine. Yeah.
We're good. See the cats after the ballpark. Get them guys be hanging out and shit and doing the
Let's just stay where we're at. I think Canada got it right, man, when they announced 2 or 3 weeks ago, like, no games in Canada. No games,
right? But they do have their own NHL bubble, which is doing fine, just like the NBA. They have no positive cases, but it was that they didn't want Major League Baseball teams coming from the United States into Canada.
Right.
They were like, that's a no go right there.
Right, bring the Florida Marlins. No, turn that entire plane back. Stop that shit in the air. Turn it back. Get the Blue Angel and like escort it back to Miami. Y'all not landing here.
That's right.
Spray the air, you know. Anything else before we sign out? Any good news anybody wants to share? Well, we're all here. That's the good news. I've discovered air frying. We can talk about that next year. I mean, next. Yeah, I've discovered an air fryer. It's unbelievable.
Oh, my son's been talking about that.
Oh, man. Unbelievable. You know, because, you know, when you... you know, I've been, you know, probably like everybody, I've been grilling more and cooking more and things like that. You know, I use a slow cooker a lot and all that. But man, that air fryer, brother, it, like, I've cooked some chicken, and it's almost like going to a restaurant, because you use no grease, you know, and it comes out with a beautiful, it's crispy, and you don't feel guilty because you don't fry it, you know, like all Crisco and all that stuff, you know. French fries, no grease. It comes out just delectable, man. Just like perfect.
What is it? Is it a pan? So like, what is it exactly?
No, it's called the air fryer, and it operates on the premise that instead of using, it just uses air.
But what is it? Air. Is what is it, like a contraption? Like, what is it?
Yeah, yes, it is. It's a machine. It's a contraption. It's not huge. You get different sizes. But, you know, it's got a basket that pulls out, and you can put your, you know, whatever you want to cook in the basket. The thing is, I found let's say you get fried chicken, right? Just, you know, so you could, you know, obvious reasons.
We'll leave that alone.
Yeah, that's not, you know, it's Black Lives Matter. But, you know, you could put it in a, what I do is like get like a small garbage bag. But then I get all my ingredients, my spices, you know, like whatever you like to, you know, you get your, like last night I did this thing where I took three eggs, dipped them in the eggs, then get these Japanese breadcrumbs, small breadcrumbs, put it in my bag, shake it up, you know, like that, just mix it all up, and then put it in your in the basket. You cook it. You could choose your temperature, you know, mm-hmm. cook it at like 390 degrees for like maybe about 10 minutes, take it out, flip it over, put it back in, flip, you know, 10 more minutes, comes out. And man, it is just like golden, you know, golden brown, crispy, you know, tender, you mm-hmm. know, I'm like, this is unbelievable. This is like what I've been trying to get on the grill. and frankly, if you want to, you can do the air fryer for like your first 8-10 minutes. Then you can take it out and put it on a grill if you wanted to.
Right. Hmm.
Just to finish it off, if you just wanted to get the grill marks, things like that. But there are all, you know, vegetables you can do on it. You could bake stuff on it. I mean, it's really, really remarkable. So
yeah, you're not playing around over there. You're putting together some stuff.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to try. My son's been raving about it, and we bought one for my 14-year-old niece because we're trying to teach her how to cook. I mean, trying to teach her from afar, but he said, "Dad, this is the way to go. The air fryer is the way to go because the food comes out great and it's low maintenance in terms of cleanup."
It is.
You know,
you almost feel like you're cheating, though. I mean, that's why I feel like I was cheating because it was just too easy.
You know? I'm going to have to try it. Hey, I wanted to ask both of you guys, we've been seeing quite a bit of realignment in the HBCU conferences recently. And so I wanted to ask you guys about that, what you think about it. Do you have any insight into that?
I spoke with, I did a piece for the Undefeated, a column last week. And I spoke to the MEAC commissioner. They've lost Hampton. They've lost Florida A&M, they've lost Bethune-Cookman, and they've lost North Carolina A&T, which is a big one. You know, mm-hmm. A&T and Hampton went to white conferences, FFN, and Bethune went to the SWAC. So they're down to bare bones. They can't, you know, so.
How many teams do they
you
have?
You know, eight. But, you know, the thing is, what are you going to do? I mean, I think the SWAC has always been very consistent, you know, but I don't know what the irony is that when I played in Morgan, my senior year was the year we left CIAA to go into the MEAC mm-hmm. because people wanted to be Division One, you mm-hmm. know, and that was like 1970. So now, whatever years later, man, the MEAC is just barely holding on. I think black schools, Steve, you mentioned it, black schools have better find a way to do things together. And I just sense, man, there's still that kind of I got mine mentality.
Very much.
You know, and that's really, I mean, A&T, they went really hard times, but they were able to get strong in the MBAC. Now they get strong in the white conferences. Okay, we'll take you,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
same thing. And that's just such a typical thing that happens to us. So I don't know. Now, it seems like most of the schools have said they're not playing. The SWAC right, isn't playing right, fall sports.
Right, CIAA also announced, they were among the first to announce, I think, CIAA, yeah.
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 Yeah, but I just think there's gotta be a way, man, for these schools. And I remember Arthur Ashe had said that to me a long time ago. I mean, he went to UC, he said, y'all gotta find a way to work together.
I agree with that. I totally agree with it. I mean, being from Hampton, somewhat familiar with their situation. Of course, Dr. William Harvey, who's been the president forever now, and you know, but he came. He's a businessman. He came in. That's his whole platform, and he's built things at that university. But he's all about that money, and you know, and he's. He's kind of a strong arm sort of president, so he's gonna go wherever the money is, but no, I agree with you. And this is to me points to the real crisis for HBCUs because they need that money, you know, more so than the other schools. And I think that you're right. And also, unfortunately, we've seen at several HBCUs prominently, there's been a lot of scandals of administrators embezzling money, you know. And we're not talking about millions, we're talking maybe tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands, but that really hits HBCUs very hard. So we have to, I agree, we have to find a way for schools to work together. What I would like to see, because there's been so much talk over the years about reparations, to me, the most sensible and logical and ethical thing for America to do in terms of reparations is to guarantee the funding of HBCUs every year in perpetuity. If we really want to invest if we want to talk about reparations and lasting reparations, this is the way to do it. And of course, that doesn't mean that white students and other students can't attend HBCUs. Of course, they do, and they're welcome. Right. But if we really want to do this in a substantive way, this would be the way to do it, because we wouldn't be in these situations where they would have to go and look for sources of money, and because we don't have that kind of generational wealth. So that would be the way to do it.
Yeah, I agree.
When you talk to people about the reason they jumped to different conferences, what is the reason? Just money-wise from the conferences?
Well, they feel there's more exposure, better TV contracts. At Hampton, they talk about the geographical footprint, I guess, more of the teams in that area. I mean, for FAMU and Bethune-Cookman, they're down in Florida, so it probably makes sense.
Texas, you know, you start playing the Texas teams. And
yeah, you just playing kind of down there. And but I think basically it's just you think it's going to be wide. I know that Harvey ultimately wanted to go to the Atlantic 10. That was his big goal, to go to the A-10 conference.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the A-10 didn't take him. But, yeah, I just think money is exposure. But like you're saying, man, they just need for them to sustain themselves. You're right. Reparations are the way to go. You know, we just need a huge sustaining pot of money. But then, to your point, you have to have these places run correctly. You know, I mean, that's because that would be awful.
Yeah, yeah. There is too much. There's been too much corruption. So that also has to be dealt with. But yeah, it's my fear is that and we're losing a big part of our culture because we're losing these rivalries. Now it's inconceivable to me, even though we're now going into the third year of it, we don't have the Battle of the Bay anymore. Between Hampton and Norfolk. I grew up with that. And, will we even see who the real HU is anymore? Will we even see that game anymore?
But they could do that still. They can still schedule to play each other if they got their heads together and did that, you know. I didn't think about it from your perspective, Bill, in terms of them sticking together, which makes sense. Because I just thought about it like, there's still HBCUs. They're still historically black colleges. You know what I'm saying? So no matter where they are, that's still Howard. That's still A&T.
Right.
But, you know, you're right. Maybe they do need to stick together in order, you know, to keep that foundation.
And I don't know what that looks like, you know, but you got a guy like Harvey who could, but you know, Harvey is about Hampton.
Oh, he's all about Hampton.
What's best for Hampton?
Right.
So, yeah. And I think back in the heyday, I'd ask this question back today. What would happen if Eddie Robinson back in the 60s, early 60s, when those schools had a lock on black talent because of racism, if anybody would have anticipated integration, had they said, okay, right now, while we've got a lock on this, how can we do stuff together so at least when these white people discover black folks, we will still have some stuff locked in. Now, I don't know. Maybe white folks would say, no, you know, we ain't giving you I don't know. But it seemed like, I don't even know if that was a mentality of saying Eddie Robinson was getting his and Jake Gates was getting his and right. Big John Mayer, Tennessee State was getting his. I don't know if they all thought, how can we do something right now before these people discover black athletes, how can we at least set ourselves in a way that we can withstand integration.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if it were now, you know, because back in those days when HBCUs had all the talent, there weren't schools jumping conferences. And, you know, now, like if black schools would have had the talent they had back then, now they could have gotten to the A-10. You know, they could have gotten to these bigger conferences where they really do get serious money because right. because
you're but they weren't conference. Playing them though. I mean, back then, I right. remember, you know, University of Maryland wasn't going to play Morgan, right. LSU. I mean, they weren't going to play these black schools,
right?
You so, know,
yeah, much less let you join.
Yeah, like you go join a you nuts, you know. but that's what back in when the Negro Leagues was found. 1920, I mean, this we're coming up on the anniversary. Rube Foster, who formed the Negro League, he was preaching to his people, we want to become so well organized that we could bring one of our teams into Major League Baseball. Right. Same thing, baseball said, no fucking way,
right.
you know? Mm-hmm. And that was a lot for Foster to bear because he had put all that, and at the end of it, he said, no, we don't care how old, we're not, but just think, had baseball done that back then, how far ahead we would be now. You know, if you would have had a black franchise in now, that by this time you probably would have had executives and right. black, you know, you would have had different stuff. And we wouldn't be you still would have a black inflow of young players coming into baseball. Just because you had a franchise or two, a black franchise or two. So you would have black players, you know, but.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting mm-hmm. time now because, you know, you got one major athlete that did sign on to play at Howard. You got other young players, young five-star, four-star players saying that they're going to consider HBCUs. So it's an interesting time for them to disband.
We'll see. I mean, I think, it was a nice story of one kid coming, but
right.
you need more than that. You actually need what the Fab Five did for Michigan. You need somebody mm-hmm. to do for like Howard or Alcorn State or something. You need five to come and win the national championship,
or just a
couple times.
Yeah, or definitely more than one. Just one top player each year going. You need multiple guys. I mean, did you hear LeBron James' son said he was either. I forget, was it Hampton or Howard was the first on his list or something like that?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I mean, he has a long way to go, so.
Okay, yeah. Well,
we'll see. He's like 4 years old, so we'll see. But it's a nice,
right.
know,
it's better.
It's a nice thing to say.
Two years ago, nobody was saying anything like that, so maybe we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
No, it bears watching.
We shall see.
Let me tell the listeners to subscribe to the podcast, Bill Roden on Sports, on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. And definitely rate and review the podcast because that helps with traffic a great deal. Give us those 5 stars. And if you know, any suggestions, any questions you have that you'd like us to talk about on the next show, if you ask the question in your review, some of the better ones, we will definitely talk about those issues for you. So definitely do that. iTunes, rate and review us. Engage with us on social media at BrosPod on Twitter and Instagram, and Bill Roden on Sports on Facebook.
At WC Roden. That's my Twitter handle. Yes. What's yours, Steve?
I'm just basically on my website, stevewilsonmusic.com.
And what's yours, Jamal?
Twitter at Blackatologist, Instagram at Blackatologist as well. As we get out of here, you'll hear the tunes of Steve Wilson, who graced us with his work that is the intro and the outro to the show. So that's Steve Wilson right there.
Yeah, somebody actually mentioned that. They said, man, who's that? I said, it's Steve Wilson.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I forget who it was. Somebody called me. Yeah, I love that intro.
Yeah, oh, man.
Me too. Yeah, me too.
I'm honored. I'm honored, gentlemen. I'm honored.
All right. Hey, everybody. Steve said, I thought that was a great line at the very beginning. They may talk about phase 4, but stay at phase 1.
Right.
That's it.
I hear
yeah.
you.
Until there's a tested vaccine.
That's it.
You're gonna try that Russian vaccine coming out in 2 weeks?
I don't think so. Yeah. I won't sign up for that one.
Yeah, I'm a pass on that.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, everyone. You know, Steve, Jamal, for Aaron, who had to go and like actually work. You know, we will see everybody next week. Stay real safe. You know, get your air fryer and we'll compare notes.
No doubt.
Next week. All right. So God bless everybody.
All right. Take care.
For listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.